We are between the Great Feast of Corpus Christi and the Great Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. In fact, we're already on the threshold of the Feast of the Sacred Heart. It starts tonight. So as I said, this is the last of our 3 days of preparation, and we'll be celebrating the Heart of Jesus tonight and tomorrow. Sunday's feast and tomorrow's feast, of course, are very closely connected. The Eucharist and the Heart of Jesus are the same. What Jesus gives us in the Eucharist is his heart. What is revealed in the heart of Jesus is his whole gift of himself, body, blood, soul, and divinity. I'm sure you have heard of some of those Eucharistic miracles that have undergone that scientific testing. When they test the flesh, they discover that it's heart muscle, cardiac muscle, the heart of Jesus. Now, in the Eucharist, it's Jesus giving himself to us in a hidden form, right? Under the veil of bread and wine, the appearance of bread and wine. Not in order to deceive us, but in order to make himself more available to us. Then when we get to tomorrow, it's as if he's exposing what's hidden beneath the appearances of bread and wine. He exposes his own heart. So in images of the Sacred Heart, he points to his inner life and reveals a heart of love. Now, I mention that partly because that's the richness of this time of the year, but also because in yesterday's Gospel and today's Gospel, Jesus speaks about appearances and about reality, the hidden reality underneath. Yesterday it was wolves in sheep's clothing, right? The false prophets were wolves in sheep's clothing. They were deliberately deceiving, false prophets deliberately deceived by putting on an appearance of goodness or innocence. That's exactly the opposite of what Jesus does in the Eucharist. He's not deceiving, he's humbling himself. He's not making himself look different than he is. He's making it better than he is. He's making himself look worse, in a sense, or at least lower. Who would ever want to look like a piece of bread? Well, that's God's way, isn't it? He's always emptying himself, humbling himself. He's willing to be misunderstood in order to get past our defenses. Anyway, that yesterday was about the false prophets. So today Jesus speaks about another problem that's not only for false prophets, but for any one of us. That is, those who speak like Christians, but don't do the will of God. Those who say, Lord, Lord, but then don't do what God wants. That's another kind of deceptive appearance or a kind of hypocrisy. And then he uses the example or the parable of the house built on rock and the house built on sand. They both look the same. They both look like perfectly good houses. But one house is solidly set on a foundation, a rock foundation, and one house is susceptible to complete ruin when difficult times come. And Jesus says that we're supposed to be like the man who builds his house on rock. What does that mean? It means listening to his words and acting on them. It doesn't mean simply putting up the appearance of listening and acting. It means really doing it. To simply live on the surface or to present ourselves as Christians when we're not really doing the will of God is foolish as building a house on sand. So this is the instruction yesterday and today, and this brings us to the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount, which people recognized was an extraordinary gift because it was direct revelation, it was direct teaching, Jesus speaking with authority. Here's an example of the authority that was so stunning to the audience when he speaks about the day of judgment. And the people complain, well, we did these miracles, we drove out demons in your name, we prophesied in your name. And then it says, Jesus says, then I will declare to them solemnly, not the Lord will declare, but I will declare to them solemnly, I never knew you. Depart from me, you evildoers. what Jesus is revealing there is that he himself is the judge. So that's the kind of authority that the people found so astonishing. No one could speak like that but God himself. Exactly the point. He's God, but he's hidden in human form. He's God and also man. Well, this idea of doing the will of God and the necessity of doing the will of God, which is to build on rock, it applies to the troubled story of Abram and Sarai in the first reading. Abram has been promised abundant offspring, been waiting and waiting and waiting, been waiting 10 years, it's already 85 or 86 years old, and no children. So when his wife comes up with this idea that he could have a child or they could have a child through her slave woman, he accepts it. Now that's clearly a human response to a human desire. Of course, the desire for children is good. That's a natural desire, and that any married couple should want children. That doesn't give people the right to do whatever they can in order to get a child. So this is actually a case of adultery, although it wasn't seen that way in the culture of the time. It's a violation of the marriage covenant. And it bears, even though it bears a child, it also bears bad fruit, including a tension between Abram and Sarai. When Sarai makes this judgment against Abram, you're responsible for this outrage. As if it was his own fault. Of course, it is his fault, but it's hers too. And then there's the conflict within the household and the permanent division between Sarai and Hagar. It's bad fruit. If we want to go back to yesterday's gospel, you judge a tree by its fruit. It's bad fruit here. And as I mentioned yesterday, there's similar evidence of lots of bad fruit in the modern attempts to overcome infertility, which is not usually concubines, but in vitro fertilization or other reproductive technologies or surrogate motherhood, surrogacy or donors of sperms or eggs and all these things. No. Those things are medically possible, scientifically possible, but that doesn't mean they're the will of God. That's building a house on sand, and it's bound to bear bad fruit. Okay. It's just one example. Now, Abram is a man of faith, but that doesn't make him perfect. And being a man of faith doesn't mean everything he does is good. In this case, that was not a good choice. Nevertheless, God decides to bless this child of Abraham and make him also the ancestor of many, many descendants. So, okay, but the point is, if you're simply saying that we have faith, and simply presenting ourselves under Christian appearances is not building on rock. Building on rock means listening to the words of God and acting on them, doing the will of our Father in heaven. That's building on rock. Anything else is sand. So we can use that standard to judge anything that we do. Is this really the will of God or not? Or is this just me thinking it's a good idea? Or is this me trying to impress others? Is this just a facade to hide my own injustice or my own sin? That's sand. But doing the will of God, no matter what anyone thinks about it, no matter how it might seem like a bad idea, doing the will of God is to build on rock.